Welcome to the Out of the Basement podcast with Devrim Turak, Patrick Gleason, and Paul Sanders. And now, here's the show.
Hey, good morning. This is Patrick Gleason from Out of the Basement podcast. I'm here today with Phil O'Connor, a buddy of ours from many years, who's over in Munich, Germany. Hello, Phil.
Hey, guys.
So I understand you've been doing game designing for quite a long time now.
Well, professionally for 20 years almost.
That's pretty good. So give us a little bit of background on yourself, because I know you've done some role-playing and gaming and that, but, you know, for our listeners who don't know who you are, and we're trying to improve your standing, hopefully, a little bit, and get your game company noticed, so.
Well, all right, you want to know where I started?
Or? Yeah.
Well, fuck, I started in RPGs, board games. I was doing that for most of my childhood.
I was going to say, that's what got you going, right? Was the game, the role-playing and tabletop and that into the computer games?
Yeah, I mean, it was high school, really, that did it for me.
Yeah.
Everything converged, computers, board games, and RPGs, all happened in high school, so.
What was your first computer game that you played?
My first computer game? Well, does arcade games count?
Yeah, sure.
Well, I guess 1976, my dad started taking us to arcades, and we would play like pinball and, you know, the like Pac-Man and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Early vector graphics games.
Yeah.
There was this really cool one about torpedoing ships. You were like this submarine and ships would pass up on top of the screen. Remember that one?
Yes, I remember that one. Yes, it's pretty
awesome. And the sound effects, you know, the different ships had different sound effects.
Yes,
and you try
yes.
to like predict the shot with the torpedo.
And, yeah, because there were some really smaller, fast ones.
Yeah.
And then you had to properly plan to shoot at the time it was crossing and everything, yes.
I was pretty fascinated with those.
Yeah. Those are going way back. But yeah, I remember those ones. Those are impressive. And arcades is something, again, that a lot of kids now don't know what they are because they've gone away.
Well, now those arcade games are pretty much on a smartphone.
Yes.
I mean, they've gone from a 200-pound machine with a vacuum tube screen to little smartphone games.
Exactly. I don't know, but the arcades were interesting too, because that's where you got to meet a lot of your friends and hang out during the time, right?
Yeah, and yeah, there was kind of like this gamer culture already forming around arcades, and that it just extended into RPGs and, you know, the nerds at school all hung out together. We all played D&D.
Yeah, I remember that. And also, like, the first computer games, too. Well, the first computers, you could start modifying, editing them a little bit for your own little tweaks here and there.
Well, let me see. In high school, we started off on this terminal system, a PDP-11 mainframe, which...
Oh, shit.
Yeah, it's like this massive thing that... The disk drives were like, the big, huge floppies.
Yeah, the not in 5.5, but the eight-inch ones there.
Yes. Yeah, two of those, and I don't even know how much was on that, like 32.
Yeah, I think so, something like that. It was,
yeah,
that's considered still an advancement for the
32K
time.
32K or something.
Yeah,
for disk drive. Anyways, yeah, and so we played like vector graphics. ASCII games.
Mm, yes.
You know, with the at symbol is your dude and you're exploring. And
Yeah. Do you remember, I think there was a long time ago, there was a very first Star Trek game, which was pretty much just, you know, little blips here and there, and you'd type in what you're planning to do in that.
Yeah. I mean, the text adventures, the first consoles, the first generation of consoles, all that stuff happened for me in the late 70s, early 80s.
Yeah.
And it kind of got me hooked on gaming in general.
So, well, now when you say game design, because game design is pretty big, right? There's a whole bunch of stuff involved in that. What's your main thrust or job in the game design part?
Well, it depends on the projects. I mean, my role has evolved over the years from writing documents and outlining systems to leading teams, creating features to leading entire game projects.
So give us an example of the games you've worked on. Sorry, I was going to say, give us an example of one of the games you've worked on there.
What, an early one?
Or anyone. what's your favorite one that you've worked on and why?
Well, I've worked on a ton of different games, and there's a couple that I really enjoyed for different reasons. World War II Online was a very interesting project because it was an MMO, which was my first, and I got to kind of apply a lot of my own RPG and board game and military history experience to creating a community for that game. So it was like two teams fighting this World War II style game, and I was in charge of the German team.
Well, that's pretty good. Yeah, because I know you did a lot of RPG and board games for based on World War II and that, and you also were very interested in history, so that'd be a perfect match for you.
Yeah, it was kind of like my dream come true, my 12-year-old version of my dream come true. Yeah, so that was really challenging and interesting, and dealing with your players, like thousands of players constantly every day is pretty intense. When you're doing a good job or a bad job, we get going with one and tell you.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's pretty instantaneous nowadays, right? It's like, whereas the old days, they'd have to write a letter or call you or something. Now it's pretty much in seconds, you know, if they hate you or love you.
Yeah, pretty much.
So what company are you working for right now?
I work for Deep Silver, which is a publisher in Europe. It's, I think it's the biggest publisher based out of Europe. Yeah.
So would you prefer working for an indie or a big game company?
Well, for me, it's not really about the company. It's about the game.
Okay.
And if the indie game was really interesting, I'd love to work for them.
Do you do the video part? Have you done any part of the video as well? Or
what do you mean video?
Like doing the designing the video in the video animation or anything?
Well, I have to. My work covers everything. Okay. So like audio, video, code.
That's pretty impressive.
Level design, character design, kind of touch on everything.
Yeah. Have you thought of starting your own company?
Oh, sure. I mean, yeah. If you have a few million dollars.
Well, why don't you try Kickstarter, maybe?
A lot of people are going that route, and it's been successful for a few friends of mine. I'm not sure that I have a game that fits that model in mind. Like, I like games that have, unfortunately, a high cost associated with them because I like basically open world RPGs and you know, that kind of game is very hard to fund on a Kickstarter. If I was into platformers or, you know, simple games that didn't require much graphics, certainly I would.
Like a smartphone app game or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, you could do those smaller projects on Kickstarter.
Yeah.
But the biggest project out there is Star Citizen, and that's like almost $100 million in funding so far, and that started on Kickstarter, and it's like it's exactly the kind of game that I would like to make.
Yeah,
but it's so bloody expensive that, you know, $100 million.
Well,
I don't think I could raise $100 million.
No, probably not right away.
That kind of street cred.
Not yet. No, it might take some time. But the thing is also like the fact that computer games have increased so much with their complexity now is quite nice. Like, even though MMOs have gone from the basic World of Warcraft, or even before World of Warcraft, to much more complex worlds now, and available to...
Well, yeah, I mean, it's the biggest expense is your staff, and the amount of time it requires to build MMO content, you know, a couple of years at a million or 2 million a year, and it really adds up quickly, and if I started my own company, I wouldn't be making games. I would be running a company, basically.
Yeah, that goes right. And not only to mention that, servers would be a big issue as well.
Well, I mean, MMOs are even more expensive than regular, you know, single-shot games.
I have a question for you regarding D&D, sort of.
Sure.
Because you remember when D&D was, there's the basic, and then the advanced, and then second edition, and they came out with 3.5 around the same time, to compete with some of the MMOs like World of Warcraft. Because they started making them, in my mind, a lot more like video game stuff.
Yeah, I think that games are always evolving, and they're always reinforcing each other. The D&D inspired a whole bunch of game designers in the video game industry, and then video games have inspired, RPG, paper and pen.
Yes.
Now, everybody plays video games now, and everybody's played paper and pen, so it's really hard not to see those influences. Mm. Cross-pollinate.
Do you think the world, like the board games and tabletop and role-playing games, are going to keep building, or will they, you know, decrease again because of all the smartphone apps and that?
No, I don't think the smartphones are going to make any kind of dent at all in the market. I mean, games are here to stay. Everybody plays games. It's kind of mainstream entertainment now, and smartphones just one more way for people to access gaming. I think it's just going to expand the amount of players out there.
Do you think with the 3D printing, in my mind, and we've talked about this on our podcast, I think will help board games and that sort of miniature games a lot, because if you have a 3D printer, you can print out any army you want or any figurine you want.
Yeah, well, absolutely. It's the same thing that's happened with digital printing. I mean, yes. You know, back when we were starting out in our gaming careers, if you could call it that, you know, not many people could print. Printing books was extremely expensive.
Yes.
Box sets and board games. But now, I mean, pretty much everybody can print, you know,
PDF
their own rules. Put it digitally out there. Access whatever audience. It's almost like oversaturated with content.
Yeah, but you're right. I think it does make it improves it. I mean, there is a lot of shit out there that's the internet, but I think it does help a lot of gamers pick and choose where they want to go or what influences they want.
Yeah, absolutely. And everybody's kind of like a big game designer these days, so
yeah.
People are making their own games for their friends, and it's just so cheap now.
Oh, yeah. So I think you should work on a RuneQuest game, though, MMO.
Oh, absolutely. I'd love to. I actually came close a few years ago, 2007, when I was working at Codemasters. My employer at the time asked all the designers to suggest IPs that were available for them to purchase.
Mm-hmm.
And I suggested RuneQuest before, but, you know, they weren't receptive at that time. But a year later, I suggested it again, and they jumped right on it.
Oh.
They gave Greg Stafford $100,000 for the exclusive rights to his IP, and with the intent of making a game, but... And I started the design of it, but Codemasters didn't have the capability, nor really the understanding or the inclination to actually make that game. They were actually on the downswing at the time.
Oh, that's too bad.
They were trying to build their portfolio with, you know, projects, but I don't think they ever really intended on making that game. They knew it was too
large and too...
Yeah, way out of their league.
Yeah.
So, well, they ended up reverting back to being... You know, a racing studio.
Yeah.
Soon after, so, but that's as close as I've come to making RuneQuest. But hey, you know, if anybody's listening to this and you love RuneQuest and you want to make a really deep, meaningful RPG on a fantastic license, probably the best fantasy world setting in the world. Talk to me.
Yeah, I don't blame you, because RuneQuest is one of those ones that it's very complex, but. So dynamic and it goes with the players and the GM who make the world and change everything.
Well, yeah, I mean, the thing is the Glorantha IP is almost more than 30 years worth of work by Greg Stafford, and he really put a scholarly amount of effort into building this fantasy environment, which has such a complex, rich, and detailed set of stories and mythologies, all based on kind of real world myth rules, game companies, you know, try to develop this kind of lore on their own, and it's extremely expensive because it takes a lot of time and a lot of writers to do this. But RuneQuest is kind of like a ready made set that is just begging for a computer game to bring it to the mass.
Oh, no, I agree, because then also, I mean, the one thing with RuneQuest is for those who are doing role-playing, sometimes the charts get a little too much for them. You know, they're like, oh, it's a chart-heavy game. But it,
RuneQuest.
But on in the computer, though, that'll all be taken care of by the programming.
Right, okay.
So that's what I'm saying, like, if they wouldn't have to worry about it, it'd just be the rich environment that RuneQuest offers.
Of course.
Yeah. Well, my favorite is still Pendragon from Greg Stafford, but RuneQuest is another one I know you and your brother Sean have played for years. Decades, actually.
Yeah, decades.
Are you still running that world every once in a while? Or?
Well, ever since I moved to Australia, I stopped, but I was running a campaign, and I might start another one. I might try to run one over Skype.
Yeah, a little harder, but it would be still good to do.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I'm going to thank you very much there, Phil, for this, because we don't want to...
Cool.
Take up too much of your time,